the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
And Brooke Roar, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Hour of power here. Show is absolutely flown by. AJ Brzezinski, fun in the first hour, taking shots at me, Ryan, Benetti, just about anybody. It's kind of what he's known for, though. The fire starter himself, Smoltzy, was just hot.
He
just runs hot. You want to talk analytics and pitching and baseball, dude just runs hot. It doesn't even matter. He was getting ready, sitting there on the course, getting ready for a charity golf event. So nice that he could join us.
I feel like, you know, he's just, by the way, he's a stud golfer, as everyone knows. But I feel like he's going to shank one off the first tee box, and then like someone's going to get, "You all right, Smoltz?" He goes, "Oh man, sorry, I just got fired up this conversation
totally
10 minutes ago."
He's going to duck hook pitching. It. He's going to hit it so freaking hard, like, gosh, this pitching situation. But you asked him a great question, and I'm so glad you did. Before I play the sound of it, I'm curious, Ryan, were you ever, through your minor leagues or major leagues, in a situation where you had the continuity of a staff that was homegrown like this one, that had a natural, healthy competition? Was there anything that was a resemblance of what we're seeing today?
In regards to like healthy competition, you know, we had from a major league level, yeah, minor leagues, yeah, for sure. There was like on years, off years. From a major league level, there was Brandon Morrow, if you remember Brandon.
Yes.
Had a great career in the big leagues, 10 plus years in the big leagues, by the way. But he was a starting pitcher back in the day. And I remember there was always that healthy competition because I was always trying to keep up with him stuff-wise and everything else. And everyone kept, you know, look, I was someone that I wasn't a big prospect. I was trying to, you know, grind my way to the big leagues. So I was just trying to get everyone's attention. And there was Brandon. You know, he could throw two shutout innings, and then that's all you hear about for a week. So I was trying to keep up with that. So that was a healthy competition. Plus, we're really good friends. We still are. And then you got Felix in a rotation, you know, and a couple other guys that, you know, look, keeping up with Felix is quite tough. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But you want to, you know, there was a couple moments there where it whatever guys do in front of you, it really, really influences what you do on the mound. That is for sure.
Well, you asked Smoltzy a really good question, you know, because back in the day it was Maddux and it was Glavine and it was Smoltz and it was homegrown guys that were, you know, maybe to this day, one of the most elite staffs in the history of the game, how they coexisted. What was most important to that, and how do guys competitively coexist? I know you loved his answer. Here was Smoltz's response to that.
I think the biggest thing that is real is if personalities allow for this to happen, then it's a great situation. But if you want to be the dude, if you want to be the guy, it's not going to work. And egos and all those things that are all prevalent in sports, and they are reality of what we deal with in every walk of life, you've got to be able to understand, A, you can learn from each other. There is that inner competition that wants to drive whatever's going good to continue to one-up the next person in a good way.
You know what? I said this during spring training as we were around these guys, and it's so fun as it's kind of lived out, and these guys have been homegrown, to your point. Luis is a fisherman from the DR. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just is. He's in his own world down there. George Kirby's a New Yorker with kind of a New York temper and flair, and you see it. Logan is a Florida boy, you know, from Winter Park, Florida. Bryce is Texarkana, Big Tex. Wu is from the Bay Area. It reminds me of my wife when she went to college. She went in with a really renowned recruiting class, and it was the same thing. It was San Francisco hard. It was Mormon, Utah. It was Bainbridge Island, Washington. It was Vancouver, BC, different. And they all coexisted so well.
Yeah.
I wonder if their backgrounds, you said this about Kelenic, if these were four guys that were all travel ball dudes, and that was all they knew and it was all they did, it might be pretty hard personality-wise.
For sure.
I think the diversity of their backgrounds, the diversity of their makeup, I think it has a chance personality-wise, Ryan, to really click and really work.
Look, this is what I know. And Pete Woodworth and I, we're pretty close. And, you know, I ask him all the time, hey, tell me more about so-and-so. And usually it's going to be something where it's like, yeah, you know, he's good, or he does this well.
And for the audience, Pete Woodworth is?
The Mariners pitching coach. Who,
perfect.
you know, he just does such a great, such a good job.
Awesome job.
Man, yep. I mean, and just translating that message, I can talk about pitching coaches all day long, good ones, bad ones. Luis Castillo, he says, if he has a rough one, now this is Luis Castillo, stuff off the charts, ton of success, Major League All-Star. He's got that flair, you know, he got that little, that fist after he strikes someone out when you watch him on the field. He's got that presence, that alpha about him. But he has no problem after having a rough one. Next day, hey, Pete, what'd you see? What do we got? Can we watch some video? Hey, can we work on this in the bullpen? Straight away, like day after. And then you got obviously Logan Gilbert, man. He's, I can't say enough about Logan Gilbert. Kind of sneaky, funny personality too. Yep. He has some inside jokes and everything else. One guy though, in this rotation that I think it was a blessing in disguise last year, George Kirby, when that incident happened in Tampa Bay and he was, look, he was vocal about getting, you know, coming out of the game. I feel like he's a young pitcher. Makes the All-Star team, having a ton of success, got to his head a little bit. He'd be the first to tell you that. Then that incident happens, and, man, he copped it. He really copped it from everyone, fans, from, I'm not going to say teammates wore him out, but us as media members wore him out. And if you don't remember, it was basically about coming out of the game and – oh, sorry, he shouldn't have still been in the game, excuse me.
Right. Yep.
He was speaking out of turn, really. That was a huge moment for him. And watching him, the way he interacts with people now, the way he has a little bit more self-awareness around him in the clubhouse, everything we talked about, you know, young kids need to learn when they're playing different sports, that was massive. And then you have a Bryce Miller who looks up to, you know, in a weird way, a Logan Gilbert, you know, a George Kirby. And obviously Brian Wu behind him, Emerson Hancock, same thing. Now, all those little elements make it that healthy competition. I don't think egos can really get involved like you heard John Smoltz talk about.
You know, that is a great point that you bring up, Kirby, right there in the past. You know, I think sometimes we flush these things and that's the beauty of baseball is, man, that felt like 10 years ago. That wasn't. Yeah. That was like last August. But the learning lesson of that, of, man, it's not about you. It's kind of, well, it's kind of like cut number, let's see, 13 here, Maura. Kind of reminds me of what the country got to see last night, man. It's not about you. And you got to be blatant and bold sometimes. And Bill Belichick last night on that roast to Tom Brady, man, no one's bigger than anybody else. And Belichick still, to this day, coaching him up and telling, well, you can hear Coach Belichick right here.
Gronk, I've been watching on Fox NFL Sunday, and I'm begging you, please, stop doing your job. Do another job. Do somebody else's job.
Or Nikki Glaser. I don't know if you heard Nikki Glaser. No relation to Jay Glaser, and I may be even butchering the pronunciation. You know, she's willing to call Gronk out as well. I mean, poor. It was a Brady roast, but man, did Gronk take some shrapnel like this one too?
Tom also lost $30 million in crypto. Tom, how did you fall for that? I mean, even Gronk was like, "Me know that not real money." Like.
I feel like the Mariners, all five of those guys, six in the rotation, could get roasted and they'd be good with it.
Yeah. I
George may get a little angry. George may be the most furious of them.
Look, man, and back to that point, by the way, that was like, yeah, that was peak last night when the Gronkowski add-on, him catching strays all night was no, I'm not going to say the best part of last night, but it was so good. Anyway, honestly though, right, you've had – teammates, right? Yep. The egos get involved, and guys all of a sudden have a bit of success, and it can change the way they perceive things, their perception of how they view themselves and everyone else. If that didn't happen last year in Tampa Bay, would that be problematic with George Kirby moving forward? Maybe. It could be a situation where he doesn't have that same awareness. It was just, it was a punch in the face. It really was.
But a great learning lesson, right?
It really was, yeah.
A great building block learning lesson that's paid, obviously, some huge dividends this season. We'll get to a few things, football, everything you need to know. The Huskies had their spring event, their finale on Friday night. What did I take away from it? And more importantly, maybe, what did Mike McDonald take away from his first weekend on the field with his team as the head coach? We'll get to that and more. Everything you need to know. Hyphens in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk right here on Seattle Sports.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Here's what you need to know. The Mariners turned around a slow start at 6-10, where the pitching wasn't really operating. The defense was a struggle. The offense, which still is a, definitely a work in progress. So they've gone from 6-10 to 19-15. That would be a 13-5 run. In so doing, they have bypassed everybody in the American League West. They're looking up at them. And, well, it's been a combination of great pitching and some critical, critical home runs. None bigger in that series down in Houston than this ninth inning shot into those Crawford boxes yesterday from the big old dumper.
Now the stretch and the 0-2 pitch on the way to Cal. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Going and going and goodbye, baseball! In and out of the Crawford boxes. And straight away left. That was a comet. Holy smokes, number 8 on the year for Cal Raleigh, his second in as many days here in Houston, and the Mariners grab the lead 5-4 over the Astros.
Yeah, you kind of wondered Sunday, right? Friday, you were up, Kirby comes out, turns out, he's dealing with a little bit of a knee. As AJ said, we never hear all the injuries with the guys. Cal's got some bumps and bruises, too. And you really hoped yesterday, after being up 3-0 and then falling apart a little bit and looking at a deficit, Ryan, I don't think I was alone in hoping. Come on, boys.
Yeah.
Come on. And Luke Raley came up with a big shot. Urias comes up with an RBI. And then Cal with that blow in the ninth against Hader. Hader of all people, the lefty going deep to left field.
Yeah, and you know what? That bullpen for the Astros has been struggling, yes. But at some point, just like AJ said with some of these hitters, at some point they find a rhythm and you're like, oh, man, if this Astros bullpen finds a rhythm and they do it right here all of a sudden,
yep.
You know, it's a tough game playing against the Mariners, everything else in Houston, packed house. But they didn't. Cal got him from the right side too. 4 of the 8 home runs from the right side.
Do you see anything different, by the way, in your eye as to why this year the power has been so balanced, at least out the gate?
I'll be honest with you, I haven't paid that much attention to
I needed to pay attention. I mean, you're a baseball expert. Yeah. I mean, that's what you are. You come on here and you fill in for Salk, and I need...
You know what?
That's enough. That's enough of you. We're going to get to football next.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
At least fake it till you make it. Say,
that's
actually,
true. That's true.
You know what, with his right-handed swing, if you've noticed, he's dropped his hands 3 inches and yeah. Everything else. I mean, Mike McDonald had to fake it till he makes it a little bit. This was his first time ever being a head coach, running an entire practice. What was it like, Mike McDonald? What was your approach? No longer being the D coordinator, now the head coach. Here was his comments after camp.
Yeah, you're looking, I think you're just, when anything we're doing, you're looking for the right intent with the guys. You know, is our minds in the right spot? Is the focus there? Or what we ask them to do, is that clear? And then are we playing and executing at a high level? And then obviously, you know, the offense, we want them to make a bunch of plays. You know, we want to make plays on defense. So there's a balance, you know, but even like when you go to walkthrough, you want guys to be ready to roll in a good body position, having the mind in the right place. And then, you know, all the rest of the stuff, we can work from there and coach them up.
As John Schneider went into the hiring process, Ryan, he didn't go into it going, you know what, the pendulum's got to swing 180 degrees. He interviewed anybody and everybody. I've heard some stories after the fact from different people that were up for that job. It was as thorough as it could possibly be. But it's interesting, as he settled on Mike McDonald, the pendulum is going to swing quite a bit. It's going to be a lot less words. It's going to be much, much more blunt. And it's going to be coming from, you know, a youthful, exuberant level of working with these guys and demanding of Gen Z, maybe a little bit more and certainly a little bit differently communication-wise than his predecessor.
Well, that's definitely a position. You mentioned fake it till you make it. You cannot fake it. Mm-hmm. When you go from his position to all of a sudden being the head guy, the head coach in that seat, veterans, guys who played a couple years in the league, they will absolutely eat you alive in that situation. So super important. But you mentioned the fact, Schneider, the fact they interviewed so many people. Mm. Yeah, it's tough when you have the amount of years of Pete Carroll and you're looking at that and you kind of look at it through that lens of saying, hey, this is just, we've had some good times here. This is that success. And all of a sudden you said that 180 pendulum swing. But,
yep.
Man, your messaging to the players, not so much to us. I mean, you can say whatever you want. You can word salad all day long. But when you're inside that room with that team, that squad, man, that messaging is so important.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I'll tell you a guy who knows how to message. You can ask old Curtis Rogers, who's going to produce the show that follows this one. Does Jed Fish know how to sell? Does Jed Fish know how to market? Does Jed Fish know how to recruit? He knows how to put on a show. Put a pretty good one on Friday night there in the spring finale for the Huskies. Here was Jed on the atmosphere and what he learned about his team.
I think we've learned that they like to compete. And they understand how to act like pros. They enjoy doing things right, and they enjoy doing things the hard way. And that's a credit to who was recruited here. That's a credit to the guys that came here with us, that the players that want to be here, they like to work really hard. They like to have long practices. They like to tackle. They like to be physical. And they love the game of football. So I've learned that if you surround yourself with people like that, you got a great chance.
And I have learned after the fact here, Ryan, that the 2024 class for Arizona that signed, they didn't sign to go to Arizona. They signed to play for Jed Fish, because now 10 of them, including a four-star running back, over the weekend that went into the portal, has committed to the University of Washington. Mon Williams, the four-star quarterback in that class. So 10 of those Arizona original commits and signees down there in Tucson now find their way to Montlake. How they all work together, that's going to be a little bit of a work in progress in that locker room between Arizona guys, Washington guys, incumbents, new guys, transfers, just a melting pot of a lot of new pieces there in Seattle. That is everything you need to know. You having fun today, Ryan? I'm sorry, man. You're a guest, and here I am just ripping you about not knowing Cal Raleigh's right-handed power.
I should. I'm not going to fake it till I make it, though.
You're not going to do it, right?
No, I'm not going to give you the, oh, hey, just shoot the ball to the right center field, and that's you should be aiming. No. Yes.
How's your ranking coming, by the way? In 20 Good. Minutes, I put a tough task on you.
You have.
Yeah, we're going to surprise the people with it, but Ryan's got a ranking of his own. We thought that we were going to talk to the Sand Hill legend, but he's asleep. It's 3 a.m. in Australia. So the next time you come in, maybe we tape it in like the hour, 5 a.m. hour, where we get him late at night before he goes to bed.
Hey, by the way, it's actually 9 a.m. I'm just not even going to bring it up that he's awake what? And waiting what? By the phone right now.
Let me what? Tell you.
No, you lied to me? I'm kidding. No. Middle of the night. Trust okay. me. Middle of the night. We're all good. We don't need any Sand Hill Warrior at 3 a.m. Let me tell you.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll sound like it's 11 a.m. over there. He's with that energy. He'd be so fired up to talk on the radio, but not happening.
Hey, let's talk a little bit. This has been 2.5 hours, and it's been an absolute blast. And it's been largely 99% the pitching. Mm-hmm. We mentioned a little bit of what Rojas is doing, which is extraordinary. Let's talk about this offense. Let's talk about Julio in particular. You know, I know it's a hard conversation, and he's our superstar, and he's doing so many things well. But 5 extra base hits in 34 games, how does that turn around? Can it turn around? What are you seeing there? We will dig into a little bit of this Mariners offense, because if it awakens with what this pitching is doing, you heard it from AJ. You heard it from Smoltz. This is not a American League West contender. This is a World Series contender. How do we go about doing that? Ryan will answer that and so much more as he sits in for Salk today on Brock and Salk right here on Seattle Sports.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
That's my favorite rejoin right there, Ryan. Gets the water moving.
I can see ya.
Like Who is that. It, Brock?
What's that?
This, Who is it?
Oh, I don't know.
This was Evan Longoria's walkout song. Back in 2008, if anyone cares.
Was it?
Tampa Bay Rays. Trick.
It's that old? That was around in 2008?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I thought that was newer.
That's right. I had the Walkman on, this and that.
I'm going to make you laugh two last times before we get serious here and talk about the Mariners offense and how we're going to get it turned around and play a little more complimentary. They're playing defense. The defense has complemented just unbelievable, historic pitching. How this offense kind of finds its footing. I'll play a little Scott from yesterday, and then I want your perspective. But before we do, can I just play these roast cuts for the third Please. And final time today?
I feel bad Please we're playing the same ones, but these were about the only ones appropriate to play on the radio.
Well, to be fair, I gave more of my filter, you know, and my filter is really, really strong, you know, when it comes to this stuff. So she did a great job. Let's take a shot at, I don't know. Let's take a shot on cryptocurrency, because this was pretty good, and Gronk really catches most of the stray.
Tom also lost $30 million in crypto. Tom, how did you fall for that? I mean, even Gronk was like, me know that not real money. Like...
And Gronk was dying laughing at that one, too.
That was really, just the delivery was so good. Oh, and so is Belichick, by the way. Belichick's going to be good on TV.
Wait,
and
it's you hear when Belichick talked about Gronk's endorsements and how he did all the foods he liked, including Tide Pods?
It's pretty good, too. And this was a good shot at Gronk's ability to do television.
Gronk, I've been watching on Fox NFL Sunday, and I'm begging you, please, stop doing your job. Do another job. Do somebody else's job.
Is Belichick stepping into a TV role?
Yes. Yeah, he's going to be doing some television this season.
The pressure's on then. I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he did it on the draft. He was on Pat McAfee. Yeah.
Isn't he working with Peyton's
He's going to be with Omaha Productions. Omaha, yeah.
He looked a little, like, awkward, stiff when you were sitting there with Pat McAfee in at that desk, I remember.
I don't understand why they paired him with, they put some fake Mel Kiper on, Mel Kiper, and I'm like, you've got one of the best football minds in the game. Why are you pairing him with these characters?
Didn't really work.
Not a good move.
No, didn't really work. Ryan Roland Smith here is going to do an awesome ranking in about 10 minutes or so, real baseball specific. Scott Servais yesterday after the game talked about, you know, the accomplishment, six straight series they've won. An amazing job as they've climbed out of a little bit of a slow start at 6-10. This pitching, as A.J. Pierzynski, you know, talked about Saturday on the call with Aaron Goldsmith on Fox. This pitching that John Smoltz talked about with us last hour has been on point. It's been unprecedented. It's been phenomenal. The offense, can it get going? Can they score enough runs? Scott Servais still talking about that yesterday after the series win down in Houston.
We're pitching awesome. I've talked about that for the last month or so. Our defense really picked up. I thought we've made a lot of key defensive plays in this series. Our hitting is still, we're still not clicking offensively. We're starting to make some strides. I thought last night's game was the best game we've had offensively. I thought our game plan early in the game against Brown was right on point. We were right there, but you know, you can get all the guys on base you want. You still got to have quality at bats, you know, when the guys are in scoring position. So that's the last hurdle we need to get over here. But I really like where we're trending and where we're heading offensively. It should be a fun series in Minnesota.
As you look at that quality at bats in scoring position, if there's anything that lights up social media or the text toy or anything else, it's just the situational hitting moments. Right, it's getting first and second, and you got guys on, and you don't get a strike thrown to you, and you're swinging out of your shoes, and there's a strikeout, and there's a pop-up, and then there's a strikeout, and you're just, you get some traction, and then it feels like the air just totally comes out of the balloon. What do you see in some of that situational batting? Is it any different than the other stuff, Ryan, or in you know, how quickly can some of that be fixed?
I think the situational side of things, first of all, they're coming off a year where the big fix, and look, these guys, especially this generation, they read everything, whether it be social media, whether it be, you know, everything that's talked about these guys. The big fix was supposed to be the swing and miss, the strikeout numbers.
Right.
So you come into this season, the pitching, the starting pitching is not quite that foundation just yet. So you're putting a ton of pressure on yourself. I think a couple of things that have happened. Number one, and you talk about Scott Servais trending in the right direction. The starting pitching is carrying this team. We all know that. That's the foundation of this team. John Smoltz talked about, if you want to win, obviously pitching and defense, that's nothing new whatsoever. It's given the offense a chance just to take a breath and kind of be a little bit off to the side. There has been an emphasis. However, even this weekend, you know, things could have gone much differently. And I'm talking about Hunter Brown, who's coming into the game with a 9. He's been on the ropes, and I've watched him pitch because he was one of my picks actually this year to have a breakout season with Justin Verlander and everything else. He's on the ropes a couple times early. The Mariners had him on the ropes, and just the strikeouts. I mean, you're looking at a team, they're 30th when it comes to strikeout per plate appearance.
Out of how many teams?
30 of 30 teams. 3.59 plate appearances per strikeout. To give you an idea, you know, the Houston Astros, a team we watched yesterday, they're every 6 at-bats. So that's double the amount of times it takes them to strike out. So it's just the strikeout numbers, I think it's especially in situations – it's a little bit of a psychological thing for some of the new players coming in for this team that was here last year. Oh man, all right, we're going to press just a little bit in this big spot. We're going to try to overdo it. We see that with Julio Rodriguez trying to figure himself out, trying to get in a rhythm. A couple of bats yesterday, you know, a couple of pitches that, man, swinging because he's just trying to do that a little too much in those big situations.
Mm-hmm. 5 extra base hits for Julio in 34 games. If I would have told you that the Seattle Mariners would be 19-15, that the Seattle Mariners would be leading the American League West, that the Seattle Mariners would be, you know, in a spot they've not been, you know, with some of the rough starts the last couple of years, they'd be in this spot in 19-15, and Julio would have a .315 slugging percentage with 5 extra base hits and 1 home run through 34 games. Would you have imagined that was possible?
Nah, I don't think so. Look, I know last year got off to, you know, a rough April. And then he had some ups and downs, but it's kind of like that second year. All right, he's trying to figure himself out. The league's trying to figure him out. But you see when he hit that home run against the Rangers, the look on his face, the reaction to that, all the nonverbals tell you everything you need to know about what he's thinking right now. He wants to go out and be that guy from a Major League Baseball standpoint, not just with the Seattle Mariners. He wants to be that face of baseball, call it whatever he wants to be, that superstar. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're sitting there, and every time you get in the box, you dig in like he does, and you glance up in your peripheral, you see a big zero in the home run column. You can talk about any other, oh, these numbers are trending the right way, the hard hit percentage is good, the average exit velo, so on and so forth. When you glance up, that simple number of big zero, yep, whack, you finally get one. Yep. And then all of a sudden, the at-bats after that, here's a ground ball here, here's a strikeout 3-2 pitch against Hunter Brown yesterday. Those things just add up inside your head, and it's man, it can really put you in a tough situation.
You know, the good news with that, you see none of it defensively. The good news is, sure, he's running out of that out of the dugout yesterday, on the way to the clubhouse, on the way to the bus, on the way to the plane. You see and sense and feel none of that, and that is enormous.
It's a great point. It's a great point because, you know, yesterday he makes that catch out there against the big garage doors, and he turns around. All the typical things he does when things are going well. Yep. How does he react when things go well? How does he react when things aren't going well? If he loses that, then you know he's in a tough spot. But that's a great point, because when guys are struggling, you can see it seep out into their defense, not just performance-wise, but just their body language when they're standing out there contemplating, you know, the next at-bat, or thinking about over-processing everything they just went through with that five pitches they just saw. But
can I give you an odd thought I had?
Yeah.
You want an odd thought from a lefty to a lefty? Julio last year caught fire when?
I'm going to say as we left the month of June.
Mm-hmm. It was a home run. It was good in July. The home run derby there at home, the All-Star game. And then he had an August that was insane. Unheard of.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Is there something to, just go do a home run derby. Get to Minnesota. Maybe Minnesota's not right. It's going to be a little cooler and you know, maybe a little wet or whatever. But what about, you know, in his swing? Because after that home run derby, right, after just that pull and just exploding as he did in that home run derby, he exploded through the month of August in just a historic way. I just wonder if it's almost like, yeah, man, let's go out and have a home run derby. And let's remember what that feels like to hit bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb. And let's not worry about going to right field. And let's not worry about it. Let's just get this ball up in the air, and let's get that home run stroke going again. And let's get you out in front of this rather than, I don't know, just over processing some of this.
For sure. For sure. A couple of things happened around that time. You mentioned the month of August. The home run derby, 100%. Around some buddies who he doesn't see, some other, you know, superstars around him. And he could just kind of, you know, take a breath, have some fun for a couple of days, go off, like you said, in that home run derby, 100%. Look around and go, you know what, I'm okay here. I'm in a good place. The other part of this too, I think teammate-wise, remember the trade deadline around that time? I think guys were settled in from a team standpoint, even Julio. The trade deadline came and went. They kind of gave up more than what they received at the time, right? Paul Sewald was that guy they gave up. And so from a team, you walk in the clubhouse and go, all right, well, this is kind of what we're left with. Now we can just take a breath. We've been struggling that first half of the season. Let's just go out and just to your point too, Brock, in the sense of just have fun. Don't get so caught up in how much is my head moving around, how into my legs am I in this swing. Now just go and just see a ball up in the strike zone and just absolutely go to town. I agree with you.
Is that what Josh Rojas is doing?
He's different, man.
I read you the tweet earlier, and I mean, he's top three in baseball. Top three in baseball right now when it comes to WRC+. It is Shohei number one, it is Mookie Betts number two, and it's Josh Rojas with a 198 WRC+. Third best, 198 for Josh Rojas. He's hitting bombs. He's playing great defense. He's got an OPS over 1,000. What is Josh Rojas just having fun? Is he having a blast?
I think he's, you talk about that comfort level. I think he's doing it differently. We talked about Julio just, hey, you know, having a fun home run derby with your buddies, you know, mid-afternoon in Minnesota. I think with Josh Rojas, and I referenced this early in the show, talking about Jared DeHart and him, you know, had these conversations, have a little bit more of a process and a plan going to before every at bat. I remember seeing him. I was in Chicago watching him, and he kept glancing in the dugout, and he was looking at Jared DeHart and asking about, you know, this pitch, that pitch. Man, when you have someone that you're rubbing shoulders with in a dugout, night in, night out, that you trust, they can give you – look, anyone can give you a whole bunch of, you know, bunch of magic pill
coaches. Solutions.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't trust it, good luck. And I think with him, he mentioned it. He made a point of saying it over and over. So I think he's a little different when it comes to Julio in that sense. But, man, is he having fun? Is he settled in? Has he found a home? Has he found a good support system around him? Well, absolutely.
Gosh, man, in that third base, so counted out. So much consternation, so much frustration in the offseason. So much, you know, and even on the show, we talked a lot about Matt Chapman. And even though it wasn't like a comfort level, like Matt Chapman's just the answer, the thought was, well, he could be stabilizing in a destabilized position after Gino moves on. And all Urias and Rojas have done is shut everybody's mouth through 34 games and been an unbelievable platoon and some of the best positional players on this roster. All right, I gave you a task before the show began. I know it's hard. You're better than I am. You're able to multitask because right now, Ryan Roland Smith's going to put a ranking of rankings together.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
Mora comes back from the Bahamas. There will be no honorable mentions. We don't need to do that nonsense. This is a ranking. And this is a ranking of the five best pitches. Individual stuffy pitches that Ryan Roland Smith has ever encountered in baseball. So much talk about the staff, so much talk about that cutter, about that splitter, about that rising fastball. So much stuffy stuff they bring to the table. I asked the Hyphen very clearly, Hyphen, can you rank the five best pitches your beautiful eyes have ever laid sight on in baseball?
All right, so I'm going to go with these five. Now, there is a little mini story to each, and I do want to ruffle some feathers, too. I want to upset some people, especially with this first one. Number five, I'm going with one of the nastiest curveballs I ever witnessed, especially in bullpen sessions or in a game. I'm like, man, how does he throw that? Are you ready for this one?
I'm so ready.
Eric Bedard.
Bedard?
I know that ruffles some feathers.
It wasn't Burt Blyleven when you guys were together in the 80s?
Yeah. No, listen, this dude, I know, look, he didn't have a good run here in Seattle whatsoever.
Five and dive, Bedard?
Yeah, five and dive, Bedard. And I'm telling you, I was in the dugout plenty of times for that, so that's a real thing. But Eric Bedard, dude, when he snapped off that breaking ball, it was absolutely filthy. It's like that RPM just sped up halfway down and just, filthy, absolutely filthy.
What's that? I feel like the spin rates and stuff wasn't around then. Right, we didn't have that kind of measurement then.
No, it started breaking in. The pure just spin rate was around 2014, 2015.
How did he throw it? Was he a 12-6? What did he do on that?
Yeah, a little 12-6, a little bit of tilt on there, but it just, man, it was absolutely filthy.
All right, you're starting out a little controversial with the five and dive, Brian Adams Canadian. Okay, that's number five. Number four.
All right, number four, when you burst on the scene, I have a little backstory to this too.
Should take your time, by the way.
Okay.
This is your world.
Sweet, man. I wanted to try and zoom through them. Aroldis Chapman. Fastball, 101s, it goes without saying. However, I never forget 2009, Team Australia, right? The underdogs, the they used to call them the mangy dogs. They're always scrapping, trying to stay in.
Yes.
There we go.
Maura and Justin said, we got no sound. We got sound.
I love it.
Play the freaking dogs from Australia sound. Okay. So the mangy dogs.
So anyway, I'm watching the World Baseball Classic, and I wasn't allowed to go. The Mariners, essentially, even though it was my choice, but they didn't let me go in 2009, right? I was too valuable. No, I'm kidding. But I didn't go. But I'm watching my guys on TV, and they're facing Cuba, and they're facing this dude who's just no one's seen before ever, and it's Aroldis Chapman throwing gas. I text some of the guys after the game, and I heard this story. On the scoreboard in Mexico, the radar gun only had two digits, right? So I kept flashing 01s, 02s, 03s, 99s. And they're like, hey, man, that scoreboard, the radar gun's busted. How hard's he throwing? I don't know, 95, maybe? He's throwing 95, 96. Like, yeah, keeps flashing up 0, 0, 0, 1. Well, by inning number three, someone came down and said, no, it's two digits. That's 101. That's 103. And these poor Aussies, man, look, when you grow up in Australia, you don't see that. Most UC is 80 miles an hour. So these dudes are like, oh, good luck. So I remember watching that and then just seeing him bust on the scene the next year. And it was so fun to watch spring training, just hearing that ball come out of his hand. So that's number four.
That's number four. You know what else you hear down in Australia? Dogs.
There he is. Hey, I've got to tell you guys a real quick story. The first time I ever co-hosted ever a show was with Brock Hewitt. It was in the morning. Yes. I was really nervous. I got here like 3 hours. I was here at 3 a.m. Anyway, he starts busting this out every 15 minutes. And I'm like, what is happening? That's the whole show was that. This right here. That is, by the way, that's a human being making that sound.
Yeah, that doesn't give great context. If you can roll it back a little further, Justin, then you can actually hear the interview. We'll get to that in a second. Okay, number three on your list. Number three.
All right, number three. Now, I'm throwing this one out there because, A, it's filthy. B, it was such a weapon. And C, because you asked me if guys can live not throwing as hard. Trevor Hoffman, dude. That guy threw 86-88 on the fastball. And that changeup, when you watch that thing in person, filthy, same arm speed, everything. It was insane. I remember watching, go, whoa, look at that! Like it's like it just stands still. So I'm giving some love to guys who didn't throw hard. That was Trevor Hoffman.
What did he circle change?
Circle change.
It was a circle change.
Circle change, just straight. Looked like a fastball and it just stopped in midair. I'm telling you right now, it was filth. Absolutely.
So we got Eric Bedard's.
Yep.
Curveball. We got Aroldis Chapman's 102-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah,
against we got the Australian dogs barking. We've got Trevor Hoffman's, what was that?
87 fastball. 87? Mixed in. No, the changeup. I'm going to go with the changeup with him. But it was a combination. But I'm going to get. I think the changeup was like 77. No joke. Wow. It was filthy.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Now we
Hold on. Do we have the full
yeah,
guy?
Yeah, here we go.
Oh,
yeah.
This is great.
Now, yesterday morning, I came out into the front yard, and the dogs were across the boat. And as soon as they saw me, they came bounding over. And I just made it into the front door.
And you know what was beautiful about that, Barnsey and Maura? Like, that guy lived not far. We found out, like, it was not far from where you grew up.
That's right. That's right.
We did a lot of research on that fella.
See,
we played
now?
That clip like 52 times on his show.
It was good. I'm not going to lie. It did make me feel at ease because I'm like, okay.
I do love that I started talking to you at one point and was like, my dad has a friend that lives in Australia, but I don't want to be the person that's like, it's an entire country. Do you know my dad? But then
they knew each other.
Your dad and my dad's friend knew each other.
How about
yeah.
that? Unbelievable. Yeah, unreal. And the guy who's making those dog sounds literally lives three blocks from me. I still still keep in touch. We're Facebook friends still.
Love it.
All right, we get into number two. Now,
number two.
We heard AJ Brzezinski and the Pitch Ninja talk about knuckleballs. Love a knuckleball. Anyone who throws a knuckleball, I'm top step of the dugout all day long, man. I absolutely love it. I got to play with R.A. Dickey, who ended up winning a Cy Young. Now, I'm bringing him up because we had Kenji Jojima catching, who hated it. Was a nightmare for him trying to catch. He really struggled catching R.A. Dickey's knuckleball all over the shot. The problem was, I was his catch partner. I was a young pitcher, you know. I said, oh, yeah, R.A. is a good dude. I'll play catch with you. And so I got lumped with having to play catch. He had to play catch with someone, right? And that was me. And so he would take it easy. He goes, oh, hey, I'll just throw a couple, and they were filthy. He's like, all right, now I'm going to throw a little bit harder. Dude, I'm telling you right now, man, I needed a face mask. This thing was so filthy. To watch that from 50, 60 feet away, yeah. Oh, I can't. Again, absolute filth, and I'm happy for him. Went on to absolutely dominate, win a Cy Young with the Mets. But I bring him up because playing catch with him was an absolute, the worst 15 to 20 minutes of my day every single day hanging out with R.A. Dickey.
This is a great little ranking, by the way. Not where I thought you were going to go.
Yeah.
Like, I had a few thoughts down, not even close. Eric Bedard's curveball, Aroldis Chapman's fastball. And these are things that the task for Ryan was what he saw with his eyes, what he witnessed up close. Trevor Hoffman's changeup, R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey's knuckler, and then the number one, numero uno.
Have a guess. This is going to be pretty easy. Teammate, I was in the rotation with him. He figured this pitch out while we were playing on the same team. That's Felix Hernandez, that changeup, man. Filthy. And I never forget, too. I remember everyone, you have these pitching gurus saying, oh, he's throwing that pitch too hard. That changeup, you got to start throwing it slower. It's not going to be effective. It's like, yeah, right. You're kidding. It was, as Felix calls it, a power changeup, man. Yes. It was absolutely filthy. The problem was you'd watch it, like, what is that, man? Because it was literally you know, three or 4 miles slower than his fastball. It was ridiculous. Absolutely filthy.
But the movement.
The movement was just like nothing you've ever seen before. Yeah, it was insane. He says it, man. That's what, actually is his words. He said that's what Pitch got him paid. That's for sure.
I mean, Luis would like to have some words with you. Logan would like to have some words with you. George would like to have some words with you. Bryce's high fastball would like to have some
words
with you.
Well, I've got a story behind every single one. Old, oh, yeah, Logan's.
Sure.
We have to have some stories attached to these,
You got to bring it when you do the morning show. This isn't your first go-around anymore.
Bob, maybe you just said you were going to be nicer to
Maybe 3 years ago, you would have, just kind of kissed all their butts.
That's
Not
right.
Anymore. No, uh-uh.
No, that's right.
That first show we did with the dog barking, you probably would have. Not now. Not now. You're a straight killer and a straight analyst and do an awesome, awesome job, Ryan. That show flew by, my friend. Thank you for coming in, for waking up early on a Monday.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, guys. Yep. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolute blast. Joy every time. The accent gets me. It wins you over. And then the analysis, takes it over the top, man. Takes it over the top. Thank you all for listening today. The Mariners will get back at it tonight. Luis Castillo on the bump. Can they keep these series wins alive? 6 in a row going for number 7 in the Twin Cities. For Ryan Roland Smith, for Maura and Justin behind the scenes, making everything go for this day, the hay is in the barn. See you.
Get to the chopper!